Technorama episode 495. Thanks a lot, Todd.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Say, where's the clothing optional Technorama hot tub?
Over there, in the media corner.
Oh, grab a towel.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here, your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, hey, thank you very much. We really appreciate you coming by and checking out the video, checking out the podcast, downloading, listening, watching, whatever you do. If you're returning, good for you. God bless you, and Happy New Year to one and all. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm good, and I'm trying to shake off this New Year smell.
The New Year smell? Is that like new car smell?
Yes, exactly right.
What do you do for that? Put an old pizza in the back seat?
Well, you know, it's okay for at first, but it gets a little annoying, and, you know, yeah, put a pizza in there, let the dog roll around in the seat. You'll be good to go in no time.
Have you recovered from the holidays?
No.
Financially? Mentally? Alcoholically? Well, what way are you still recovering?
Financially, of course. I don't know. I'm working on the others.
All right. We hope every one of you has had a wonderful holiday season. You're ready for the new year, back to work, back to school, having a good time and getting back into the groove quickly, because that's what we did last week. And it worked out pretty darn well. Actually, I feel bad because I never really took time off. I had a few days where I wasn't working, but I was, because my job is so much fun. I was just building apps, making software, solving problems. It was a riot, and I was learning and getting more material for future episodes of our work podcast.
Well, see, for me, I'm gonna be honest with you. I know that I've got a busy season coming up, so I did not sweat taking off.
You went off the grid practically.
some days I did, actually, because I needed it. I've been ultra connected, so I had to take a little break in some respects.
Hey, Julie's watching.
Oh, good.
My daughter, Julie.
Hey.
Some of you viewers and watchers and listeners may remember her because she used to be on the show for a few years. Thank you very much. So she is back to school working her PhD this semester.
Ooh, smart nerd. Nerd alert.
And Lisa starts her internship tomorrow. Oh, by the way, this is Elvis's birthday as we record this on January 8th.
Oh, that's right.
So just more useless trivia from the Technorama archives. Do we have feedback? Looking.
No,
that was it. Okay, then let's go into the history.
As everybody took the time off.
On this day in history for January 11th, 2017. Oh my gosh, I'm going to have to learn to say that right. This is the 10th day of the year? How did that work out? I think I got a software bug in there. Shouldn't that be the 11th day? All right.
Yes.
It's the 11th day now. There are 354 days remaining in 2017. Yeah, I really got to look into that if I can't do simple subtraction. The first recorded lottery in England was on this date in 1569. Hopefully it's not the kind of lottery where you draw names and get stoned to death.
No, yeah, not that lottery. It was also on this date in 1759 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the first American life insurance company was incorporated. I kept thinking that was in this American Life. That's the show.
You got to wonder what premiums were back then, don't you?
Yeah.
William Herschel discovers Titania and Oberon, two moons of Uranus, on this date in 1787.
That same date in 1908, Grand Canyon National Museum is created.
Museum?
Monument.
Now it's a national park. But at one point, it was a museum for all the bones and geological history. In a strange sense, you are correct, Craig. It is a museum. It is a time capsule. Right. It was 95 years ago today that saw the first use of insulin to treat diabetes in a human patient.
Louis B. Mayer, head of the Studio Metro-Golden-Mayer, the old winds. Announced the creation of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences at a banquet in Los Angeles, California, on this date in 1927.
Now, what do you think that Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences banquet turned into?
Maybe Oscars?
The Academy Awards, that's right. January 11th, 1935, Amelia Earhart becomes the first person to fly solo from Hawaii to California.
And 68 years ago today, the first networked, I'm using air quotes here because it's in the show notes, television broadcast took place as KDKA-TV in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, goes on the air connecting the East Coast and Midwest programming.
You know, it's kind of odd that it was in Pennsylvania, but it had a K call sign, KDKA. They must switch that around later.
It is weird.
Well, don't look at that. Okay. It was 53 years ago today that Dr. Luther Terry, MD, the Surgeon General of the United States, publishes the landmark report, Smoking and Health, not about your colon, reporting of the Advisory Committee of the Surgeon General of the United States saying that smoking may be hazardous to your health, that little warning we see on all of the smoking packs, sparking national and worldwide anti-smoking efforts.
And smoking with your colon is bad for your health as well.
Ooh. Ooh. No, don't do that. It'll burn your butt.
That's right. It was also on this date in 1986 that the Gateway Bridge in Brisbane, Queensland, Australia is officially open.
I think it's Brisbane, but we'll go with that. January 11, 1996, STS-72 launches from the Kennedy Space Center, marking the start of the 74th Space Shuttle mission and the 10th flight of Endeavour.
Where am I at? Oh, yeah, happy birthday goes out on this day, too. Yeah, English engineer and architect Samuel Bentham, born on this date in 1757.
Oh, I should have taken the first birthday because I can see what's coming. English physicist Joseph Jackson Lister was born 231 years ago today.
And born January 11th, 1788, English chemist and academic William Thomas Brain.
This is why I should have switched him around because...
Excuse me.
Agnos... Jedlik. J is pronounced so many different ways in the world that I don't know my Hungarian. He's a Hungarian physicist and engineer who was born today in 1800.
American businessman and philanthropist. Why did I trip over?
Philanthropist means he gives out money.
I know that. Like Tony Stark.
Keep reading.
Founded Western Union and Cornell University, Ezra Cornell was born on this date in 1807.
He founded Western Union and Cornell University? I've never heard of Western Union University. Interesting.
Western Union and Cornell University.
Is that one university?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Albert Victor Backlund, Swedish mathematician and physicist, was born on that same date in 1845.
And born January 11th, 1872, American physicist, an academic, G.W. Pierce.
Swiss chemist and discoverer of LSD. Albert Hoffman was born 111 years ago today.
111, that's what I was going to say. 71. Also born on this date in 1925, American television producer, co-founder Kim Enterprises, Grant Tinker.
Some bandwidth issues on your end, I think. Lev Dyomin, the Russian colonel, pilot, and astronaut, was born 91 years ago today. If he's a Russian astronaut, wouldn't he be a cosmonaut? Or maybe he flew on a U.S. mission. I'm not sure about that. We're going to look into that.
Yeah. And, American web developer and businessman co-created WordPress, Matt Mullenweg, is 33 today.
We tried to interview him years ago, but didn't work out. That's the way it was on this date in history for January 11th, 2017. Also on listener birthday calendar, we have the 14th, which happens to be Glenn Tolar's birthday. It's also my brother's birthday. Mm-hmm. It's also my grandmother, dearly departed grandmother's birthday. And I found out yesterday that it's Jack Mangan's birthday on the 14th. So
wow.
Jack's not on our listener calendar. He doesn't listen anymore, apparently.
Great.
He almost he made
shows
it
up and, hey, he just shows up and is on the show every once in a while, but that's about it.
Yeah, when his agent lets us talk to him.
Agent.
January 15th is Ralph Whitfield, a.k.a. Goofy Ralph. I love that. That is great. And the 17th is Fuffy Frog, one of our good friends. We haven't seen her at Dragon Con in a while, a.k.a. Christina from Canada.
Please make another appearance.
Thank you very much. Yes, please make another appearance. If you want to be on the listener birthday calendar, you can go over to chuckchat.com/wiki. We'd love to see you go over there. You're free to edit it. Put your name on there. Some people put their wives' names on there, their parents' names on there, just so we give them a fair warning, assuming they listen to this before the event actually comes up, and can send them a birthday card. But we're not sending you a birthday card. It's not how it works around here. We have some news, and this is big, scary news.
Good news, anyone?
We have Korea's first mech takes its first steps with a pilot on board. This thing looks kind of like an AT-ST with arms.
You know what? When I watched the little video,
yes,
I couldn't help but think of Iron Man when the guy was in the suit and it twisted.
It sort of looks like it's about to dance.
Hey, and I remember, that's to have a dance off with the mechs. was it Iron Man 2 when Justin Hammer was showing the demo videos? Or no, he was showing videos of Justin Hammer's stuff and it twisted that guy in the suit.
I'm going to have to go back and watch. I just watched Iron Man 1 on Friday night, I think it was.
Oh, you watched it again?
Yes. It was. Anyway. It still holds up. What is that, 2009? That movie was made? I don't remember.
Yeah, it's been a while. But yeah, you know, it's funny because I think I saw it on Hulu. So I watched it again. And I was like, you know, really, that movie did hold up. It was actually really good. And I know we're getting off topic here.
Should we read the story?
I like how when you watch it, though, and then you, of course, keeping in mind the progression of the suits that he's had since then.
Yep.
It really like puts it in perspective. You're like, wow, this is when him really starting out and it still works. Because it's not like just as advanced as the ones we've seen in the current films. It's actually a little bit less and it's gotten better.
It's just like real life with the technology advancement. Speaking of real life.
It is real life. Yes.
That real life size mech Korean company Hankook Mirai debuted recently isn't just for show. Its design, Hollywood SFX veteran Vitaly Bulgarov, wasn't he the guy with the electric whips in Iron Man 2? Has posted a video on Facebook showing the robot taking its first steps. And yes, it had a pilot on board. The 13-foot-tall, 1.3-ton machine was created to work in extreme conditions where humans cannot go unprotected. It won't be able to go on rescue missions anytime soon, though, not without a power source that's portable enough. Bulgarov says the company's short-term goal is to develop a tethered robotic platform with industrial applications. The company could also mount its top part on a larger wheeled base that can accommodate a chunky power source if it really needs to traverse rough terrains where there's nowhere to plug in. You can watch the mech by going through our show notes, click on the link, and it'll take you right there. It's kind of a cool video to watch. It's had about 214,000 views to date. Only below, it says there's another video that's not available. That's disappointing.
Oh, it does. I actually just realized there was a second video, but I watched the first one. It's pretty cool. It takes some kind of baby steps, walks forward, and then it starts walking back, and it looks really nice. I'd wonder if you start throwing it in that terrain that we, you know, I think about when they say where people can't go,
Mars?
Or shouldn't go. I wonder how well it's going to do. Well, yeah, it's like, okay, what happens if it steps on an uneven rock? Is it going to topple over?
No, they're making robots better. I mean, you've seen some of the, and I wouldn't call them autonomous. Well, maybe they are. Like the robots that you can push over and they get back up, or they do better balancing on uneven surfaces.
Yeah, the DARPA ones, like the donkey, the
big scary looking dog one that runs after you and eats your car.
Right. Yeah. No. So I don't know. I think it's pretty cool. All this, obviously, it's got a ways to go because they got it tethered to the ceiling. Make sure it doesn't fall over. And it needs a power source.
I forgot to mention something at the top of the show. Those people on Facebook, if you'd be kind enough to share the video, then other people can watch as well. It's a lot more fun than, well, I think football's done for the day. So watching live is always an extra treat because you get to contribute. We get to see your comments as they come in, and we will pass that along. I'm going to back up a little bit. I mentioned Mars for that robot as a possible, and that may be possible in the future to use a mech to walk around in a hostile environment like that. Well, you may not be alone because alien enthusiasts claim to have revealed more evidence that Mars was once inhabited. They have discovered what looks like a spoon. Oh, I
it
wish
does
I had
look
the,
like a spoon.
I wish I had the clip from The Matrix. There is no spoon.
No, it does look like a spoon.
Yeah, it does, kind of, but that assumes that the intelligent life had the same shape mouth and had a mouth as what we have.
Had a mouth. I don't know. It's just like the Mars face. Remember, everybody was like, hey, look, I see a face.
Well, there's no
Mars.
Scale in here. Is this thing 2 millimeters long? I don't know. Is it 3 feet long? If it is, it could be an oar for a canoe. When they used to have water.
And they need to put a banana down there for scale.
A banana for scale, right? That's what they need. That's what they need.
Well, there's a planet. There's a picture of the planet for scale.
Yeah, that helps.
But no, it's... See, I was... Okay, look, I'm wondering, and I'm sure next time we have a astrophysicist on here, I'm going to ask. But is there any possible way something... could be ejected from Earth and show up there. Like if we had a...
Rocks. We found Martian meteor in Antarctica, so I'm sure they went the other way. When something strikes the Earth, pieces of ejecta got blown off. And
well, I mean, I'm thinking, okay, not just rock. You know, that's pretty basic thing. I'm saying an object, a Coke can, I don't know, some garbage get ejected from Earth and make its way to Mars. Could that possibly happen?
Think about this. In order to eject something out of the atmosphere, it has to reach escape velocity, which means whatever hit the Earth would be pretty big. If it hit somebody's kitchen, it would have to be really big, and you'd hear about it on the news. We haven't heard anything about this on the news, so I doubt any spoon. Plus, if it did, it's pretty much going to vaporize whatever it hit. If anything was nearby, like a spoon, it's going to be so mangled and melted by the time it gets there. It's not going to look like this pristine encrusted thing that you see in front of you.
Yeah.
This is wind erosion. I'll bet if you go to the other side or the underside, it's connected to a rock.
It might be. No, I'm just, I know, and this is that's probably not a spoon from Earth. I'm just saying, is it possible that something could get ejected from Earth and make its way?
It would have to be really, really durable. Because look at what. Now, granted, they don't have as much atmosphere, so things going to the Martian surface are not going to get burnt and melted by the friction of reentry as badly, but they will get hit by that.
Yeah. All right.
And we got to have the same concerns when you send landers and rovers and whatnot to the Martian surface. There's still an atmosphere to be thought of. So the idea that a spoon is going to make it there, probably not from Earth. I hate to be honest, but it's more likely that this is a rare alien spoon than it came from Earth.
Wow. Okay, so it's real. No.
But if it were real.
Yeah. I know your mind can play tricks on you, especially when you're looking at just a flat photograph.
Yeah.
But you have to admit, it does look kind of convincing.
And I like it because it's one of the times when you're not looking at pareidolia. You're not trying to make a face out of this image. It looks like a spoon. But there are galaxies out there that look like crazy stuff too. So it doesn't mean that
there's plenty of crazy stuff on this planet.
Plenty of crazy people too. What's your point?
I don't know.
John Miller says that article was sponsored by Breyers. Our snack pack pudding mix.
Right.
One more space story we've got is NASA is actually going to visit that insane metallic world. You think all they play is Metallica?
No, I was thinking,
Enter the
I was
Sandman.
Thinking more like where were the Autobot, or where were the
Decepticons?
The Transformers from?
This might be where the Transformers are from.
Oh man, my mind's gone blank. I can't even remember. So
there's nothing quite like Psyche anywhere else in our solar system. A small asteroid belt object made entirely of iron nickel metal, which is why NASA has decided to send a probe to check out the bizarre beast up close. Quote, humankind has visited rocky worlds and icy worlds, but we've never seen a metal world. Linda Elkins Tanton, principal investigator of the Psyche mission, which NASA just greenlit as part of its ongoing discovery program, told reporters in the press call this afternoon, Psyche's appearance remains a mystery. This will be a true exploration and discovery. Measuring just 130 miles or 210 kilometers in diameter, a giant hunk of space ore known as 16 Psyche is located in our solar system's main asteroid belt, three times further from the sun than the Earth is. Yeah, because we're, what, about 93 million miles?
Mm-hmm.
130 miles in diameter. Okay, so three times further out. What's 93 times three real quick? About 400 million?
Sure.
Okay. I'm doing fast math and rounding rapidly.
Fast and furious.
It'd be 300 million. That's why I did fast math. It's believed to be the stripped core of a small planet destroyed in the very early days of our solar system. That would make sense. Because the idea is that there's an iron nickel core at our core. I went 130 miles. I think our core is much larger than that. So this must have been a small planetoid. Okay, visiting a world like Psyche could offer scientists a chance to learn more about the mysterious interiors of terrestrial planets, including the Earth's, which is one of the reasons NASA has decided to push forward with this somewhat offbeat mission. Psyche's appearance remains a mystery. This will be, that's just a quote from the earlier part of the article. You can go see, and there's lots of cool graphics about what's inside the center of the Chewy Tootsie Pop.
How many licks does it take to get to the center of Psyche?
To get to the metal interior of an asteroid belt.
One, two.
We are going to take a quick break and be back with some more Hacks and Strange stories. And for you people watching the video, we've got a new little video graphic here. We're going to play right now. It's debut. Thank you to Scott Tyler's daughter for drawing this up for us. It is a whole lot of fun. She took our music, she took our logo, and did something cool with it, which we will do now.
Geek Thoughts.
If clouds are made of condensed water vapor, then is cloud software really just vaporware?
Hey listeners, this is SF Edwards, creator of the Spiral War universe, and you are listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
Was a short break.
It was a short one. I was trying to hook up my Ethernet cable, but I was like, he's making a short break.
I'm glad you didn't make a lot of noise because I forgot to mute. I think I heard one clunk.
So, because I threw something on the floor.
There was a lot more button pushing in that little break than usual. So I'm glad everything kind of worked out. You might have picked up a little bit of echo on there. Which means we have a Hacks and Strange Stories. Where is it? There's the Hacks and Strange Stories. We have a beard brew specifically. Now, there have been other beer shampoos. Keep that in mind. What was the one in 70s? There was a...
Oh, gosh.
It I wasn't Gee, Your Hair Smells Terrific. It was... someone in the chat
room. Gee, Your Hair Smells Alcoholic.
Well, this is meant to be consumed while you're in the shower. Shower beer is 10% beer by volume, which I am not going to be drinking out of a shampoo bottle.
I love beer, but I'm going to tell you something. If you got a drink in the shower, I think you got bigger problems.
This wouldn't be the first time alcoholics have stashed things in shower bottles.
Right.
Shower beer is a collaboration between Swedish creative firm Snask, S-N-A-S-K, and Stockholm-based beer makers Pang Pang Brewery. Or is it Pong Pong? I can't tell. Each small 18 centiliter. Who measures beer that way? It's
centiliter.
It says 18 cl. Wouldn't it be? Why don't you call it milliliters? Oh, because centiliters is more than milliliters. Milliliters, 18 milliliters would be tiny. Okay, that makes more sense. But why wouldn't you just say 180 milliliters?
I don't know. I don't really see centiliters very often.
It's a 6-ounce bottle. No, neither do I. That's why it's kind of odd. 6-ounce bottle containing 10% ABV pale ale, and it's made for drinking in the shower, is all highlighted.
So when you're getting ready to go out for the night, you can get a head start and drink while you're in the shower.
Hey, I look pretty good in the mirror. Right. Of course, if you shower anything like I do, you're probably going to need a 6-pack. That's why I fill my toilet tank with ice and use it as a cooler.
Hey, that's an idea.
Here's the quote. We wanted an idea, a concept, something bigger than just the actual beer, something that could kickstart the night and act as your power up while fixing your hair and listening to Dressed for Success. I was going to say Sharp Dressed Man.
Hey, unfortunately, it sounds like they're talking to me.
You're their demographic, Craig. You're in sad, sad shape.
Yeah, I know. Hey, why are you in the shower for so long?
We chose to create the shower beer, a sweet but strong pale ale in the 18 cl small bottle, meant to gulp in 3 sips. Well said. If you drink the thing, what are you washing your hair with? It's like, why not just put beer in the shower?
I know.
While standing in the shower, getting ready for the night, it will, of course, work to start the night in any bar alone or with your friends. Hey, baby, want to come back to my place? We can drink in the shower. Oh, this has just got wrong.
By the way, John Miller says he's going to pass on this one.
It's not sponsored by Breyers, I guess.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, let's give a shout out to the chat room since you brought us to that point. Yes.
I do want to say one thing. Their problem is, you know, they need 12-ounce bottles, not 6-ounce bottles.
Pint.
Yeah, that's right. They need a whole pint.
Come on, get your groove on. We've got John Miller, Tim Elliott, scanning. Teresa Thompson, Steve Chopnick says, how's it going, eh? Just been the Canada comment. Chris Bardson, whom I used to do martial arts with once upon a time. My daughter Julie, we mentioned. We've got Gary Lindros, also a martial artist companion from the old country. Eric Alexander, Scott Tyler, John Miller Jr., we mentioned him. We've got Cindy L. Adamson, which is a distant relative of mine, second, third cousin. I can't remember now. Craig Glasner, Ranger Craig, formerly of Alcatraz Island, has also joined us. And Sinful.
Formerly a resident of Alcatraz.
Former resident? Be nice. Sorry. If you want to join us, you can join us here on Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern Time. We try to be as punctual as possible, but stick around. Go to the Technorama page at facebook.com/Technorama podcast and say, notify me when these people post something or we're online. And we'll have all the fun with you. Lots of nerd humor posted out throughout the week as well. The title of the show, actually, thanks a lot, Todd, came from an article that I spotted. There was a sign outside a bar that said, what was it? Lightsaber night canceled?
Lightsaber night has been canceled. Thanks a lot, Todd.
So I think that was a Reddit or an Imgur image.
It was.
You got to wonder if that was a real thing or someone was just trying to get a picture taken.
Doesn't matter.
Thanks a lot, Todd. And it begs the backstory of what Todd really did. Okay. We have a Remember
Actually,
When
I was
story.
I was hoping you didn't think it was going to be referring to your cat.
No, that would be TOD.
Oh, just one D?
Trouble on Demand, I think is what it stands for.
Okay. Now it makes sense.
We have... There we go. Knew I'd forget to hit that mute button once tonight.
Hey, actually, we hadn't heard that in a while.
Yeah, we haven't done a Remember When segment in some time. Yeah. We have 16th century boxwood carvings that are so detailed that researchers used an X-ray to solve their mystery. My goodness, these are beautiful.
They are, and in some instances, they couldn't use the X-ray.
Why not?
Because they were laced with gold.
Oh, what would you use? A scanning electron microscope?
I don't even, I guess, maybe.
I would love to know how they built these things and watch some artisan and how long it would take, because they're not very big. This one looks like it's about the size of a walnut shell. We've got a gallery that's going to show on. Yeah.
Go get in the time machine. Let's do a beer run.
Come on, Peabody. Here are only 135. Oh, there are only 135 known miniature boxwood carvings, as they have been puzzling art specialists all over the world. Recently, researchers have gathered some of these tiny religious pieces from museums and private collections to further study their secrets and have found a new, very interesting answers. It's thought that these wooden carvings were made during only a brief time frame between 1500 and 1530, either in Flanders or the Netherlands. The rise of stupid Flanders. The rise of new merchant social class in Europe created a market demand for high-quality portable religious carvings. However, soon the Reformation began and a lot of church-related accessories went out of vogue, including the miniature boxwood pieces. Using micro CT scanning and advanced 3D analysis software, tripped over that one, researchers found out just how intricate these miniature altars really are.
Turns out they use 3D printers for the whole thing.
That's what it's sounding like. It sounds like this is layered work. Hold on, listen to this.
Yeah.
The inner layers are pieced together, hiding the joints so completely that a microscope or an X-ray can detect them. The pieces also incorporate pins smaller than a grass seed. However, much of the production... Now, the pins are referring to, like, wooden dowel pins that connect this stuff together, not the kind that you put on your shirt.
Okay. A splinter.
The pieces are... where was I? However, much of the production process remains unknown because traces of gold and other decorative materials conceal X-ray views. These are gorgeous. I mean, there's...
I especially like the ones that are circular and it has some depth to them.
Yes.
Those are fantastic. It's about the shape of a large walnut.
These must be priceless.
Yeah.
At first, I thought they were all one unit piece of wood, but upon reading, they're layered up, which kind of gives you a 3D printer effect.
You know, I don't think you could do it, or at least some of those, the ones with depth. I don't think you could do that without doing it, because
even with a 3D printer, these things are scary detailed.
Yes, they are.
I mean, I've seen 3D printers, and they usually leave sort of some sort of telltale layer or ridge line or something between the layers. It's nuts. Mm-hmm.
Hey, you should see, I've been watching the Tested channel, which is Adam Savage's YouTube channel.
Okay.
And they've been at the Weta workshop, and they've been making these models. They're for a game, and like a board game type thing. And then he's like looking at this beautiful robot model. And says, well, here's some smaller versions of it. And it's just, they were scaled down, but they were talking about the way they had to scale it for the 3D printing to make it still look detailed. And they're getting to the point where it looks like this, but it's funny because this was done so long ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy. That's the funny thing.
Yeah. It would be fun to use a scanner to model these so you could do them in a 3D printer. And you could have replicas, but they'd be plastic today, not wood. Or maybe you could do a laser wood carving cutter. Nah, never mind. Anyway, let's give a shout out to our patrons who helped make this show
all
the better. Thank you to our patrons. This show is brought to you by you. We have Kyle Nishioka, Mike Will, Steve Therian, Saturday Morning Media, Chris MC, Alexis Duran, Ben Vaughn, Dennis Patnod, Nick St. Gabriel, Amy Bowen, Abner Braverman, Leon, and John Noble. Thank you, everyone, for your contributions. You help make bandwidth possible, hosting possible. I'd say Christmas
life
party
possible.
you breathe life into this podcast. If you want to be one of the...
Except for you, Todd.
Thanks a lot, Todd. If you want to be one of the few that can claim this elite status, go to patreon.com/technoramapodcast. Find out how you can be part of the fun for as little as a dollar a show and get content specific only to this great audience that we call our patrons. Thank you very much. We do have some notes from the Let me stop that. Doink, doink. Okay. We do have some comments about that last article. It said, I think Todd has some anger issues. Any way to get rid of the terrible lag on Craig's end? Well, that would be to get rid of Craig.
Is it that bad?
The video. The audio isn't bad. The video is horrifically latent. And it's only in this last hop between my laptop and the computer 12 inches away, which is weird. It's something about Wirecast, and I am checking into it. John Miller Jr. says, might be his internet provider. I think they're having some issues in his area. And Cynthia Fry says, oh, now we're going all Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on this story. Splinter. Do love it. I believe we have some Media Corner. Do we not?
I think we do.
Did you spot this story? Let me play the Media Corner thing. There we go.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the Media Corner.
You know what those clips are for? Those clips are so I can pull up the links.
Yeah. He's stalling.
Because if I pull up the links too far in advance, the browser gets bogged down and then it crashes and I gotta pull them all up again anyway. Oh, yeah. My. This is Revenge of the Sith, one of our favorite movies of all time, gets an insane redub using Chinese to English subtitles, which I think is hysterical.
Yes. Well, now, we have seen screenshots of the subtitles before, you know, like, do not want, you know, Vader yelling at the end
yes.
of the movie.
Well, there's also the entirely redone of, yeah, do not want was from Star Wars... The Third Gathers, which was episode, the backstroke of the West. And it is embedded in here in its entirety. If you want to go watch that, go through our show notes and find the Star Wars link in the Media Corner.
The entire movie.
Yes.
Is there.
I have not sat through the entire movie, but just the crawler is worth it.
I skipped around. And watched a couple other clips and then, but I skipped around and it's fun. It is funny because you're like, you understand the words, but in that order, it's just not quite right.
Backstroke of the West highlights part one. Anakin, space general, you and not equal to I think severe. But they say it so smoothly that you might just miss it. You got to hear some of it.
Game time started.
Game time started.
He is in my behind. Good, good, good. Let us counterattack him. The disgusting thing came.
Now,
it's like they're,
I
like
have to put this in context. This is the scene where Anakin and Obi-Wan are flying in on that first spaceship, and Anakin gets those little robot droids stuck on his wing.
Yeah.
And he's got to go out and expel those. But they're having this dialogue between each other, and it doesn't make any sense.
Good kind of. Do you fuck on I?
Oh, I should have bleeped that.
Good, you beat the inside. Good kind of R2.
Good kind of R2.
I feel far from good.
R2, you know what this reminds me of is like trying to read Shakespeare.
R2, come back. I need you foolish in the ship. What?
Yeah.
And it goes on like that.
I love that one where the emperor says, I foresee one day you will become invisible.
And they don't call him emperor or Count Dooku, Mr. Speaker.
We are for the big.
We are for the big.
Even since you are separate, I has been hating you.
I has been hating you.
You are a sacrifice article.
That I cut up rough now.
R2, let elevator stop. The day after the fair, jump quickly.
The day after the fair, jump quickly. This is what I wanted to do with one of my apps that I was going to write for ServiceNow to translate a song and pump it through like 7 language translators and back to English and see what happened.
By the way.
Yeah.
Scott says this is our next MST3K spoof.
Oh my. We're going to have to get really loaded on that one for it to make any sense. It's kind of like
for the big
Pink Floyd lyrics.
Seriously, it's like trying to read Shakespeare's, like read the old English, and you're like, huh?
Before you and I separate. What? I'm not sure I got that at all.
Yeah.
We have a couple things in the Geek Library before we go. How are we doing on time? Oh, hey, we're doing all right. Perfect. Let's go to the Geek Library then.
Wow.
We have a library.
We'll wreck that,
John. We haven't been here in a while.
Yeah, it's a little dusty. It must be.
Now, you organized the show notes. So I'm curious how this first one got in the Geek Library.
It was because it was something to read. I don't know.
They're all something to read. You lost me on that one, buddy.
I don't know, but I got to tell you, I was kind of happy for this guy because what he's done. So I figured I had to put the article in somewhere. I just threw it in there.
All right. So, it's the end of the show, anyway. And it's just a fun way to go out. Milton, Ontario. It was a day for talking, not running. Snow was piled along the streets. The driveway was icy. Ed Whitlock's shoulder hurt. His face had been puffy. He did not feel well enough for the cemetery. This sounds like it was translated to Chinese and back.
Yeah, he is for the big.
At a visitor's urging, Whitlock showed his display of novelty trophies. A beer can for winning a series of races as a 60-year-old, and there's still beer inside. A coffee mug for becoming the first and still only person older than 70 to run a marathon in under 3 hours. A baseball for throwing out the first pitch at a minor league game. Quote, it bounced 3 times to the catcher.
There's some more of that Chinese speak.
Whitlock, no, he threw the baseball and it bounced 3 times before it got to home plate. Hey, he got to throw the ball. It is not his arm, but his legs and lungs that have made him a scientific marvel and an octogenarian phenom. In October, at 85, he set his latest distance running record, completing the Toronto Waterfront Marathon in 3 hours, 57 minutes, 34 seconds, and becoming the oldest person to run the 26.2 miles in under 4 hours. Wow. Having set dozens of age group records for the metric mile to the marathon, Whitlock remains the forefront among older athletes who have led scientists to reassess the possibilities of aging and performance. That is pretty darn cool. This is a fairly long article with lots of great pictures of the gentleman.
Yeah, there's some more details about the science and the medical behind it, which is kind of neat. But yeah, it's just that, I mean, his physiology is just allowing him to do this. Of course, he's been training, but yeah, it's amazing that he's 85 and able to do that.
They took a picture of him running past the cemetery. How apropos is that?
I know. Gee, thanks.
He must be visiting his friends, but only for a little while. That
he's
is
trying to run
cool.
away from the cemetery, I think.
We wish him all the best, and I wish I could run 2 miles in under 4 hours, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
Final story of the night is from one of my favorite cartoons, XKCD.com. If you are a nerd and you're not reading XKCD, why not? There's a lot of good stuff. Even if you only get 1 out of 10 of the references, it's pretty darn funny. Then you know whoever's writing this, right. It's not for his artistic talent because all the people are in stick figure form, but the humor, the scientific fact is great. And it's the scientific fact that makes this blog that Craig stuck in here at the last minute called whatif.xkcd.com all the more better. The subtitle is the book, What If? Serious Scientific Answers to Absurd Hypothetical Questions. We will give you the first one that pops up on the top of here. Since Death Valley is below sea level, could we dig a hole to the ocean and fill it up with water? From Nick Traden. And the answer is yes, we can do anything we want. We shouldn't do this, though. Because it would be gross. And he goes into the science of this whole thing. It is crazy. Yeah.
Randall.
Oh, you cut out there, buddy. Randall who?
I remember he said he worked from NASA. And I thought it said robotics. But he had quit to do the XKCD comic. And which at times is very scientific in itself and funny at the same time. I happened across the book. In Amazon Prime, if you're a Prime member, they started giving titles that you could read for free, you know, under Prime. Uh-huh. So I saw this. I went, okay, I'm interested in this. So I realized, oh, this is from Randall McRow, the SKCD guy. And I tell you, it was at times funny. And some of the questions, you're like, who thought that up? But, you know, then again, I go, well, I come up with a few myself. So I'm the kind of person that would think those up. But he does try to answer them seriously with a little humor here and there.
Right. And he throws in some XKCD comics as well. I went back one, and it says, how many fireflies would it take to match the brightness of the sun? He says, not that many. I mean, it's definitely one of those gigantic numbers with lots of zeros, but in the grand scheme of things, there aren't as many zeros as you might expect. And then the comic right below it says, has two girls standing in front of a board with like 30 quintillion written on it. Any number you can fit on a whiteboard basically rounds down to zero.
That's right. One of the questions in the book had to do with what other planet could you fly a plane on and get similar results that you could do from the Earth?
Wow. You mean an exoplanet that we've discovered so far, or one in our solar system?
One in our solar system. And I think it was like, it wasn't actually the planet. I'm sorry. It was a body, but it was like Titan, I think, was the one
that makes sense. That it
would be pretty similar. And then but he went through the other planets and talked about what would happen, like on Mars.
You wouldn't be
going really
lift.
Fast because there's the atmosphere is so thin.
Right.
Yeah, it's very thin, and by the time, and there's no plane that we manufacture that could go that fast to get, you know,
or airborne. You would need really, really large wings.
That's probably true too.
He went through
what would happen on Jupiter and what happened on Pluto. Anyway, I recommend the book. It's fun. I had a good time reading it.
You got it in ebook, or how did you consume this book?
Yeah, in the Kindle. It was a Kindle free. It was in the Kindle Prime.
Oh, and speaking of books, we did an interview with SF Edwards, which we'll be releasing very soon. He is the author of On Dagger's Wings, and he is also, his day job is, what is it, aerospace engineer, tester, something really cool. So he's got his hooks into the aerospace. You can hear his whole backstory in our interview, and we just wanted to give a shout out to him. We'll be getting that interview out very shortly. It would have been out already, but Chuck lost some files, so Craig and Chuck have to re-record a little bit to make this thing happen.
Yeah.
My happens fault. Again. The Technorama right. effect took effect.
That's right.
I'm going to close out with a question of the week. This week, what is your favorite, or what is your most valuable software app that you cannot live without? I'm going to have to think about that one. I have lots. I'm going to go for the easy target right now and say it's the browser. Like Chrome.
Well, the browser, yes, I'd say the browser is pretty important. But I was thinking more like apps. So I'm going to have to say probably something like Evernote.
Okay. There's probably not that many that I cannot live without. Because if there was no Chrome, I'd use Firefox. If you wanted to get general and say web browsers in general, well, it'd be pretty tough to make use of the web without a browser. And Evernote,
I think it's just,
I would find a suitable substitute for Evernote.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's several. I'm just saying, I guess it would have been better. It would have been a better phrased if I said favorite software app.
Well, I think you did phrase it quite right. What is your most valuable software? It doesn't say what the part that you can't live without it might be superfluous, but what is your most valuable software app? We want to hear from you.
We
haven't told you yet in this show, but there are ways to contact us. You can call us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. That's our new listener line. We'd love to hear from you. You can even push a button on Facebook and leave us a voice message. It says call
here.
Yeah,
there's a big call button. Yeah, there's a big call button right there.
It's been there for like a year. Nobody's ever used it except me to test it.
I challenge you, the listener, to use it.
There's a whole bunch of listeners watching right now. Why not just push the dang button? Let us know your software.
You, the one person that's watching this video at this moment.
You're assuming they got this far 50 minutes into the show. You know, I think the average watch time is like 40 seconds. But if this is your 40 seconds, push the button.
Yeah.
You can also email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. Hey, share the video if you did make it this far. It's a lot of fun. We enjoy doing this, and we enjoy doing this for more people even more. Did that make any sense? Look at that. Oh. I didn't even tell Donna about that. I had a new subtitle down there on the video. Share, a like, or subscribe to this video. She's awesome. My wife is the video engineer, and I love her. Oh, you know what? I think that takes us to the end of the show. Should we do the standard ending stuff? I think it's this big black button that used to be here. Yep, that's it. We got the music. We got to go. Like we said, 707-530-CHAT, 707-530-2428. We'd love to hear from you, Technorama, chuckchat.com. You can find us on Facebook. You know, if you're watching this, you're already... Well, you know, because we repost the video also on YouTube, so you can find us
logic.
Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, you name it. The place to launch for all this stuff is our website at chuckchat.com/Technorama. Thank you very much to our patrons one more time for their contributions. If you want to be a patron, go over to patreon.com/Technorama podcast. We would love to see you on the list and give you a shout out every week. Until next week, Craig, I look forward to talking to you. But would you please give the listeners a big happy binary high five for the new year?
101? I'm going to be happy about it.
I'm happy. And get out of my internet.